You're listening to The Space Show, presented by Andrew Rennie on 88.3 Southern FM. In 2010 April, President Obama travelled to the Kennedy Space Center to open a conference to chart a course for American human spaceflight in the 21st century. A diverse group of 200 senior officials, space leaders, academic experts, industry leaders, and others with specific expertise or interests related to the topics of discussion attended. I was among a select group of journalists who attended. I was the only Australian there, save for Australian-born NASA astronaut Andy Thomas. In this series of Space Show specials, I will bring you the ideas as presented in four sessions, as well as a conference wrap-up hosted by NASA Administrator Charles Bolden. In the first of these programs, we have already brought you President Obama's conference opening speech, in which he laid out his vision for the future of American human spaceflight. Following Obama's remarks, NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden, who flew the space shuttle four times, took to the President's lectern and gave an overview of the conference.
The men and women of NASA are working tirelessly to enable the new plans for NASA. These new plans set the stage for transformative space achievements over the coming years. There are a lot of smart people in the room today, lots of smart people in the room today. Not the least of whom is my friend Dr. Ed Crawley, who's sitting there going, wonder who he's talking about. Bo Beamick, and I should stop now because I'll run out of names and everything. But there are lots of smart people here, and we want to take advantage of having you all here. I know that we can count on all of you to contribute your thoughts and your ideas in the sessions that follow, and we really want you to do that. This is not for show. Okay, please understand. We want your ideas. We want your thoughts. You're going to hear some panelists talk and give their ideas. If you have competing ideas or ideas to the contrary, it's okay. If we come out of this day and it's like we were all looking at the same hymnal and singing the same song, then we have failed. We really want people to discuss today because we want to learn from you. Before I begin, I've asked two individuals to provide some initial comments as we head into our breakout sessions. These comments will help provide context and foundation for the conversations to come. I'd like to provide some short words of introduction for people who I consider to be national assets and real friends. Dr. John Holdren is the Assistant to the President for Science and Technology and the Director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. John has a long and distinguished history in academia. Besides holding advanced degrees in aerospace engineering and theoretical plasma physics from MIT and Stanford, he has taught at Harvard and Berkeley. He was the director of the independent nonprofit Woods Hole Research Center. He's a member of the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, and the American Academy of Arts and Sciences, as well as a foreign member of the Royal Society of London. A former president of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, his awards include the MacArthur Foundation Prize Fellowship, the John Hines Prize in Public Policy, the Tyler Prize for Environmental Achievement, and the Volvo Environment Prize. This is the man you want advising the President on science and technology, and we're lucky to have him with us today. Shortly after President Obama took office, he turned to another leader to advise him on the direction of the U.S. space program. That was Norm Augustine. Norm Augustine has served as a leader of some of America's strongest aerospace companies. He is quite possibly the most recognized member of our corporate aerospace community. He served on the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology under both Democratic and Republican presidents. In addition to last year's committee, he led the 1990 Advisory Committee on the Future of U.S. Space Programs and the 2005 National Academies Commission that produced the landmark report, Rising Above the Gathering Storm, Energizing and Employing America for a Brighter Economic Future. He is also the author of the well-known Augustine Laws books, which feature his deep wisdom and wit. Norm, will you help us by beginning?
Comments by NASA Administrator Charles Bolden at the opening of the American Space Program for the 21st Century Conference in 2010 April. The next speaker, as he's just introduced him, was Norm Augustine. He was the chairman of the committee that Obama set up to review United States human spaceflight plans. In this review, the committee concluded that the Constellation Back to the Moon project should be cancelled. So in this talk, he sets out the rationale for the Augustine Report, the cancellation of Constellation and commercialization of routine low Earth orbit operations, and he presents a vision for future space exploration.
Charlie, thank you very much, and especially thank you for the plug for my book. If any of you happen to have a copy, you're a member of a very select small group. We are very fortunate at this point in time to have a leader of NASA such as General Bolden. This is a pivotal time, and his impact is going to be so important. I'd like to, before I begin, acknowledge that several members of my committee, our committee, are here today. Charlie mentioned several of them, and I'd just like to thank them for all they had done to contribute to this effort. I've been asked to offer the perspective of our group that conducted the study of future planning for the human space flight program and to share with you a few of the factors that have to be considered in putting together a space program that will be sustainable. I should mention that our committee had 10 members that included astronauts, scientists, engineers, former presidential appointees, Air Force general officer retired, and so on. We were given 90 days to conduct our study, the title of which was Seeking a Human Spaceflight Program Worthy of a Great Nation. I should probably emphasize the role that we were asked to take. We were specifically not asked to make a recommendation as to a particular human spaceflight program. Rather, we were to offer options. And as I understand it, the reason for that was to permit us to be very independent and dispassionate in trying to provide the pros and cons of various alternatives and not to be burdened with having to defend any particular recommendation. Furthermore, the answer to what is an appropriate space program depends so heavily on what the nation can afford to pay for it. And that, of course, is the role of the Congress and the President and not something that we could address. In all candor, I have to say that I've spent most of my adult life working in the space program. I candidly am an advocate. And I have many friends who are on all sides of the current debate about the space program. This is a topic in which reasonable people can and do disagree. Let me quickly summarize the issues that needed to be taken into consideration in putting together a program such as the President has described to us today. It has many moving parts, interdependent moving parts. First of all, there's the space shuttle program. A long time ago, the space shuttle program was decided to be terminated at the end of the current fiscal year, and that we would depend upon Russia during the interim until we had an appropriate launch vehicle to launch our astronauts into low Earth orbit. That interim appears to be about 5 to 7 years. We could, of course, restart the shuttle program. The problem with doing that is that it consumes funds that are badly needed for the exploration program. Furthermore, it confines us to low Earth orbit for a prolonged period of time. It does have the benefit that it helps to reduce the turbulence in the employment of a very talented group of people. But once again, one is faced with trying to maintain total continuity of employment on one hand, and on the other, having a program for the future. Turning to the International Space Station, it's taken us nearly 20 years to put that station in place and declare it operational. The previous plan called for ending that program 5 years from now, after only 5 years of full operation. It would seem that the marginal benefit and cost, and I'm not referring to a sunk cost, but a marginal cost of continuing to operate that program at least another 5 years, is a very good investment. Furthermore, our committee's visits with leaders of other countries and their space programs convinced us that to stop operating the ISS 5 years from now would be very damaging to our relationship with our partners in space. Let me turn to the Constellation program. At the time the Constellation program was initiated in 2005, it very, very reasonably was an executable program. It was one that could certainly be defended. But for a large variety of reasons, the actual funding that's been available to that program has been about a third less than the original plan. And that's been exacerbated by several other factors. One is that there was no money to take the ISS beyond the first 5 years. So if you continue it, you have to take more money to make the old plan work, more money away from the Constellation. There was no provision made in funding to deorbit the ISS, now a 900,000-plus pound object, which needs to be responsibly disposed of when its life does come to an end. Ares 1 encountered technical problems, as we all know, the kind one might expect in a tough development program, but it was required to shift funds to solve those problems. The bottom line is that, in the view of our committee, the Constellation program, as it then existed, was not executable. The main reason was a mismatch between the resources that were available and the scope that was planned for the effort. There was also a further issue, and that is that, in essence, what was being asked of the citizens of this country was to add another $60 billion to the budget for the next two decades to what was already in the plan for the Constellation. And in late 2020, if all went well, we would land on the moon. And in talking to many, many people, and particularly young people, the reaction tended to be, well, that was my grandfather's space program. And I say that, Buzz, with all apologies to you and Neil. Next thing that should be mentioned is the Ares 1, the launch vehicle. The Ares 1, of course, suffered from the problems of the Constellation program as a whole. 4 years into its life, when we conducted our study last summer, its schedule had slipped between 3 and 5 years, so that it tended to be too late to support the International Space Station and really too early to support any exploration program or a return to the moon. Meanwhile, it was consuming money that was much needed for a heavy lift launch vehicle and other purposes. Ares 5, the heavy lift launch vehicle. It's very clear this nation needs a heavy lift launch vehicle, and soon. That was a conclusion of the study I was involved in 20 years ago as well. It's a capability, though, that in terms of Ares 5 had barely started because much of the money had to be diverted away from it. Turning to the Orion capsule. The Orion capsule, once again, is the sort of a thing that will be needed in our space program, more or less any direction it takes. And a less costly version of it would provide for us a very good crew rescue vehicle that could be used if indeed we shut the shuttle down, which, as you've heard, the president intends to do. Finally, there's the issue of carrying cargo and crew to low Earth orbit. Today, NASA is essentially trapped in low Earth orbit by the cost of hauling cargo and crew to low Earth orbit. By using commercial firms to provide that capability, there should be substantial savings possible that will let NASA focus its immense talents on the more exciting things of exploring outer space as opposed to hauling cargo and people between here and 300 miles from here. You may recall that the commercial airlines were created when the U.S. government awarded contracts to carry the mail. We have the same kind of an opportunity here for NASA to award contracts to carry people, cargo, fuel to orbit. and to save money such that NASA could focus on the more exciting things. Now, I would never suggest that we confuse airline operations with space operations. On the other hand, the question does arise, do we have less faith in the U.S. aerospace industry to carry our astronauts to orbit than we have to the Russian industry to carry our astronauts to orbit? This is a decision that entails risk. There's no question about it. But with the strong, active oversight of NASA, I believe our industry is up to the job. Finally, the question arises, and the President really addressed this, why conduct space exploration at all? Certainly there are benefits to the economy, to education, to science, but the real benefit of the view of our panel is that it gives us a way to chart the way for humankind to expand its presence out into the solar system. It doesn't seem that we have a need for a second moon race. We need to set more demanding goals, and in our mind, that goal is landing humans on Mars. The problem is that we're not ready to do that today, in part due to the neglected technology base. Undoubtedly, we will be able to land humans on Mars in the not-too-distant future, decades. On the other hand, we do have the opportunity to do a lot of exciting things in the meantime. And our committee referred to that as the flexible path. It was a concept for space exploration where one takes steps every few years to something ever more exciting, including things like circumnavigating Mars, orbiting Mars, landing on a near-Earth object. And it probably will include, at some point, returning to the Moon, going to Lagrangian point, landing on Phobos or Deimos, the moons of Mars. Well, that is a highly simplified version of our 150-page report. For those of you who like to read that kind of things, you will recognize the President's program as being very close to the option 5B that we had proposed. It would seem that if adequately funded and if timely decisions are made, the President's program does give us a way to have a human spaceflight program worthy of a great nation and, as others have said, to transform us from transportation to exploration. Thank you very much.
The final speaker at the opening session of the American Space Program for the 21st Century Conference was John Holdren. He is the assistant to President Obama for Science and Technology. He is also director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy.
Well, I want to start by thanking Charlie Bolden for that very gracious introduction. But even more, I want to thank Charlie Bolden for his extraordinary service to this nation in a career that Senator Nelson summarized briefly, that included being a Marine, an aviator, a test pilot, and now, after a number of other kinds of service, the extraordinarily far-sighted administrator of NASA. I also want to thank Norm Augustine and his panel for the extraordinary service that they did. I know how hard they worked, and I also know the high value that their painstaking findings held for me, for the NASA administrator, for the President, as we grappled with the challenge of formulating a plan that would, in fact, be worthy of a great nation. I also want to recognize the astronauts who have been good enough to come here today, the current astronauts and the former astronauts. Buzz Aldrin has already been mentioned, one of the first two human beings to set foot on the moon. Charlie Bolden, our NASA administrator, twice a shuttle pilot, twice a shuttle commander. But I also want to mention, I think I've counted at least another eight who are here. Mae Jemison, John Grunsfeld, Ed Liu, Bob Cabana, Leland Melvin, Andy Thomas, Mike Fola, Brewster Shaw. I don't know if I've missed any. I do need to say that the courage that it takes to allow yourself to be strapped on to 5 million pounds of thrust and rocketed into space, never mind the courage it takes then to step outside the capsule out there, is something I can only imagine barely. I think we owe these heroes an enormous debt. I'm not going to take a lot of your time. In a moment, we're going to break out into our four parallel panel sessions. I just want to say very briefly, if I had to encapsulate in just a few words what I think the President's new plan for NASA and human spaceflight represent, I would say it's a faster pace in space, more missions to more destinations, sooner at lower cost. I think the plan offers a more flexible, more practical, more productive, and more affordable, but also more visionary approach to U.S. leadership in human space exploration than the plan that it replaces. By stimulating an expanded commercial capability for carrying cargo and astronauts to low Earth orbit and allowing NASA to devote more resources to advanced technologies for exploring deep space, the President's plan will greatly increase the number of missions to the International Space Station between now and 2020 by U.S. astronauts, expanding the U.S. use of the station for pathbreaking science and as a platform for advanced technology development. It will greatly increase the total number of missions, human and robotic, launched from this space center between now and 2020. It will shorten the duration of dependence on Russian rockets for carrying U.S. astronauts to low Earth orbit following retirement of the shuttle. It will accelerate the development of the advanced technologies needed to take our astronauts beyond low Earth orbit with greater safety, shorter trip times, greater capabilities at destination, and lower costs than with current technology. And it will expand the roster of deep space destinations that U.S. astronauts will be able to visit after 2020, so that that roster includes not only the Moon, but also near-Earth asteroids, the moons of Mars, and, of course, ultimately, the Martian surface. I think that as people come to understand the flesh and bones of this plan in detail, they will recognize its vision for what it is, which is far-reaching, inspirational, a way that the United States can move forward in space in the 21st century in a manner, as Norm Augustine has emphasized, worthy of a great nation. With that, I would like to invite folks to depart for the various breakout sessions. There are four panels, as you should know, a panel on expanding the use of the International Space Station as we extend its life, a panel on advanced technologies for moving deeper into space, a panel on the destinations on the flexible path forward, and a panel on the economic opportunities associated with the new plan.
And there we leave the Kennedy Space Center. On this evening's space show, we have been at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida, and the topic has been American Space Program for the 21st Century. On our next show, we will hear more from the movers and shakers of the United States Space Program. And get that pen or diary handy, because we're going to tell you how you can find out more about this conference and the things that I saw in Florida in just a moment.
Barney is a dog. He looks like an ordinary dog. Barney doesn't do tricks, but with your help, he can go to guide dog school and learn to perform miracles. Turn a special dog like Barney into a guide dog. Give to guide dogs now. Call the Guide Dog Association on 9854-4444. 9854-4444.
On the space show, it's coming up towards 14 minutes to 8, and that'll be time in a few minutes for Purple Haze. Now, if you want to find out more about those events in Florida, then head to the Southern FM website. This is at www.southernfm.com.au. Now, Southern FM is one word lowercase, so southernfm.com.au/space. And from there, you can link through to the Florida Diary, and also you can download some of the previous programs we've had here on the Space Show. So head to southernfm.com.au/space to find out more about the Space Show, the Space Association that presents this program, and other things. Right now, we're going to hear about energy bubbles in space.